And of course, our guest, John Geiger, final hour now with your stories, your questions about the Angel Effect on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we were talking with Tammy in Florence, Oregon, who was telling us the story of how she was shot. And Tammy, I'll let you give us a little quick recap, and then let's go ahead with the rest of the story.
Deer was talking to me through the trailer door, told me I was going to get shot. At 11:23, my dad called me in because there was a lightning storm that was hitting the trailer and the trailer alone. I told him that I was okay, God loved me, went into the house, slept, woke up the next morning, told everybody what the deer had told me. Mom said she didn't want to hear it because I've been known to see things before they happen before. Okay. Dad had to go get stuff. Mom goes out, does the gardening at 11 o'clock, 11:20, she comes in. I said, okay, I'm done with the computers. Let's go fix the cow fences. We get out to the cattle fence at 11:22. I turn around and I said, I love you, Mom. And a 30-06 Winchester Model 70 hollow point loaded for elk hit me in the back of the head and took out the whole right side of my face.
Oh, my God.
I'm also missing a quarter of my brain. I go to the hospital. And I'm there until, this was October 27th of 97. The doctor says, sew her up, she's going to die. There's no way he believed I was going to live. It was the day before my dad's 56th birthday, and I went to a coma. I mean, on my dad's birthday, I woke up. I told him, happy birthday. I'm sorry I ruined your birthday for you. He's in tears saying, no, I'm glad you're still with us. We get home November 11th. I'm done, you know, going in and out of a coma. And they told me I'd never be able to walk or know anybody at the hospital. And I told the doctor then, you're not God. And I'm not going to accept what you tell me. I'm going to accept what God does for me. I'm in bed. I can't move. Literally feeling like I'm paralyzed. Every night, my dad would stay up. He's was a retired Green Beret. We lost him to Agent Orange. But he said I would walk across the room like I was floating, get in front of a big picture window, and kneel down and talk to somebody. Every night I did this, I was talking to that deer. And every night that deer would go farther and farther back. Same deer that told me I was going to get shot, George. When the deer,
I'm amazed that you're here talking to us, Tammy.
Oh, George, I'm a miracle. I really am. I really am. The bullet was a hollow point. If you seen my CAT scan, you would think you were looking at the stars.
You're talking to me right now with a quarter of your brain gone?
Yes, sir, I am.
Amazing. You sound perfectly okay.
I still have issues. Seizures, bad days, when we're having solar flares, I'm basically under 20 pillows hiding my head because of her.
All right, Tammy. Well, look, you keep listening to the show, and thank you for that story. And there are some miraculous stories here, John Geiger.
Yeah, there certainly are. And, you know, what's fascinating to me, I mean, the deer is a new one for me, you know, in the sense of how this presence or this force has manifested to people. But, you know, most of the people that I've, you know, communicated with and spoken to, et cetera, have said that it's, you know, they don't know, they can't assign an identity to the, you know, the presence. It was just there. It was benevolent. They don't know what it was. Some will actually describe it as being like you know, deceased loved one, like a beloved grandmother.
That's like a ghostly apparition, though, isn't it?
Well, it's not an apparition, you know, but they all sign. I think what happens is that people experience this presence, this benevolent presence, and then afterwards they try to figure out what it was. And so for some people, of course, you know, people who are religious and have a strong spiritual foundation, you know, it is an angel or it's God or something. Others think, you know, it must have been, you know, my grandma. She really always was looking out for me, or my father, who really, you know, they will assign an identity. But I generally speaking, people don't know, you know, the source of the presence, what it is that's helping them. They just know that something is there helping them.
Let's go to Sue in Rapid City, South Dakota. Hi, Sue. Thanks for calling.
Well, it's an honor. After that story,
wow.
That is an amazing story
sure
that
was.
She had. Wow. Anyway, I was going to give a car story with the swoosh and the hand that
all right,
threw
go
my
ahead.
Car and me into a... I was in Sundance, Wyoming. I had left Rapid City, and I had was traveling, and this was after I'd received a phone call from my son saying, it's really snowing heavily, it's a blizzard where I am, and please don't go to work. Well, I had no choice because this was for a family that was in a child custody sort of situation, and I was having to transcribe for the attorney in Atlanta, and Georgia, and so I had to get it done. I said, John, I said, don't worry. I said, I will make it, if I can get up to Spearfish, I will be able to make it to Sundance. And that was the case. And so I worked, and I came at about 5 o'clock. It had gotten more sunny in Sundance as the day went on, and I thought, ooh, it's going to be wet. And it was, and I didn't pay much attention to that until I got to this terribly bad curve in the interstate, exit 51.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget
We'll never
it.
Forget that exit, no.
No, and I saw a white, both lanes were filled with 18-wheelers and lots of cars, and I was beside a car that looked like it was brand new, and there was a beautiful brand new red truck in back of me, and I saw that white Jeep way up in front of me, and I thought, I'm going to slow down a bit. I was already way under the speed limit because it was icy, and didn't realize it was black ice. Then the brakes were ABS.
By the way, black ice, to people who don't know these kinds of conditions, that's with the soot and the exhausts and the oil. They get all into that. Okay, go ahead.
I just thought it was slush. I had never been on black ice before when I'd been driving.
Very slippery.
It's super tricky. And I pushed the brake, which you don't do that with an ABS car.
Nope.
I didn't know that at the time. John hadn't, it was his car, and I didn't know that.
You pump him.
I shouldn't do that, that you got to pump. But I pushed. And I started sliding. And I came within about, I thought for sure I'd hit that green car, but I didn't. All the icicles on the bottom of it were still intact as we stopped at the side of the road after what happened. And I kept sliding and going sideways. And the car in back of me, I was concerned about. The truck was there. He had dropped back considerably. And I said to the car, I said, John's name for the car was Blaze. And I said, Blaze, I don't care what happens to us. We are not going to go over the guardrail. We're not going to land on anybody, and we're not going to hit anybody up here.
Huh.
And I kept saying it over and over and over. And I said, please, I need help.
And so you asked for it.
And fly. Huh?
You asked for the help.
I did ask. I said, I don't want to hit anybody. It would be ugly.
Understood.
Because there was so much traffic. And after I said it for what is now the final time, I felt a whoosh, and the car went sideways and right directly into the guardrail. And I was okay.
But the car
was. I have no idea how it happened.
Well, John, let's bring John in here for a second and to talk about these similarities that are obviously showing a pattern of how much of this, though, John, is good luck?
Well, I mean, Sue obviously felt that it was something beyond good luck that was at play. And her experience, which is remarkable, is you know, similar to some of the people that have approached me, Derek Rodriguez, who was in Texas and also hit some black ice, and the car went off the road. His sister was driving, and he got out to when the car finally stopped. He got out to make sure the vehicle was okay, and then he was struck by another vehicle and sent flying, flying through the air. And he actually felt that he was, that an angel had essentially taken him and steered him so that he didn't hit. He was going to hit a telephone pole, and he felt that he was actually directed, and he felt that it was an angel very strongly that saved him. So he miraculously was not seriously injured in this incident after having been hit by a vehicle. So, you know, there are these cases, and there's this incredible accumulation of them, and people are all saying it wasn't just dumb luck, you know, that something else. Derek certainly felt, as Sue did, that it was something more than that, that there was an actual intervention that protected them in that moment.
All right, a couple more calls before the break. Let's go to Lisa in Bremerton, Washington, first-time caller. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, George. What a lovely treat. I'm a longtime listener since 92.
Kind of a nice day, the nice way to start the year, basically.
Yes, talking to you. How wonderful. And hi, John, by the way. I'll start out by telling you that I'm totally blind. I lost my sight when I was 27. I was 3 months pregnant due to, I had cataracts removed at the University of Washington when I was 4. They were growing on the inside part of my eye. Developed into secondary glaucoma, uveitis. And I've had pressures as high as 60s and 70s. And 19 surgeries and 14 laser treatments later. So I've been seen by the best of the best. Anyway, I was 27 when I lost it, and I was very calm because I guess I dealt with eye problems most of my life, so it didn't, you know, and it happened overnight. And I gave birth to my first son, and he was about 2 years old, and I was living in a mobile home. My aunt, my uncle, my mother, and my son were there. And I went to the closet to open it up, get my aunt's jacket out. And my mother was talking to me. Now, I do not recall hearing anything from her whatsoever. I opened the door, and there was the angel of all angels, Jesus Christ, standing right there, just as if my kid was standing there. And he says, I love you, my dear child. You fear not to see, for you shall see better than them. And I blinked my eyes, and I was like, oof. Okay, I took some cold medicine or something. I'm hallucinating. And his hands, each one on my shoulders, staring straight at me, I can still see the different colors in his beard. And this was not a picture from, you know, when I did have sight, when I was younger and saw pictures of Jesus. This was, and mind you, I had already lost my sight.
Right.
So I'm standing there, just my mouth is dropped open. Now, on the other side is my mother saying, Lisa, get your aunt's jacket for Lisa. They're getting ready to leave. She's walking up behind me, apparently. She's shaking me for approximately 3 minutes. My aunt was ready to call a doctor. That's all he said to me. At that point, I felt this heat come over me, almost, well, I'll say a woman having a hot flash. And the sweat poured off of me. My mother shut the door, and she goes, what is wrong with you? My body and my clothes were soaking wet. The two handprints on my shoulders were totally dry. And I tell you, he gave me the best gift of all. I tell everybody, I'm a chosen one because nobody else could handle all the stuff that I've got to handle. And he has given me a wonderful life. I would never change it again to have sight for nothing in the world. I've been through wonderful experiences that most sighted people wouldn't have the chance to do. I went to a convention at the in our Capitol Olympia, got to play the piano, dance on the ballroom floor, feel the crystal, sit in the legislative voting boxes, tactile things that sighted people just kind of take for granted. And so I don't know if you'd call that somebody protecting me, but I sure do.
Wow, I would think so too. Chalk that up for another victory, John, huh?
Yeah, wonderful experience. You're very lucky.
Let's take a couple more calls here for before the break. We'll go to Jim in Portland, Oregon. Jim, welcome to the program. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, John. Hi, George.
Hey, Jimmy.
I was wondering if you've come across what I would call the tired pilot effect. The angel, as it were, would be internalized. If you could imagine like your body is like a ship or an airplane and the spirit is just too tired to function, something else takes over. And I had one, but I think the most famous one is probably a famous American pilot, Colonel Gregory Bowington. I think he shot down a Japanese pilot, but then one of them got him, and he was in the water, and this guy came back and strafed at him several times. He got progressively tired. He kept diving as deep as he could, but after a while, he could only put his head underwater, and then the guy flew off. He popped open his life raft. He got in, and the gravity of the situation hit him. I mean, fighting a sense of hopelessness. He had the most important thing he had was a little prayer card from a Catholic orphanage, the Seaman's Prayer. Anyway, after a few hours, the submarine picked him up. It was one of theirs, but the commanding officer said, look, I think you're with the mercenary, the Flying Tigers. When we get back to port, I'm not going to mention that. I suggest you be careful what you say. And he survived it, and he... I think he had a, I know the tell, I think he was a remarkable personality, and he had something like that. And I was wondering, do you come across stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, of course, you know, soldiers and people in the military, sailors, aviators, you know, the pilots, you know, are obviously subject to unbelievable stresses. And that's just part of what they do. And so, you know, a good number of the cases that I've you know, been exposed to, and people I've spoken with, have been through those sorts of horrific examples. You know, they've been in situations that you talk about a life and death struggle, and invariably, you know, the accounts are similar to what you've described. You know. You know, whether it's a soldier in Vietnam who's repeatedly, you know, at the point of death, in fact, clinically dead, and being, you know, experiencing a presence that's telling him, you've got to give a sign that you're still, you know, that you're alive. You've got to give a sign, you know, don't give up, and actually then making a jerk or some sort of movement that would attract the attention of the, you know, the medical personnel. And ultimately, you know, helping to save his life. And in each of these cases, you know, the person felt that it was, again, a religious experience, that what preserved their life, you know, was spiritual in origin.
All right, John, we're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take final phone calls here. You've been a trooper hanging in with us. You're in Toronto, and it's very late there. John's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His work, The Angel Effect. Back in a moment with the rest of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, make sure you're part of our show on Friday night. Open lines for you on Coast to Coast AM. Let's come back and take final calls here with John Geiger as we talk about The Angel Effect. Welcome back to Coast. John Geiger with us. John, The Angel Effect book, where can people get it? I assume it's all over the place?
Yeah, it should be all over the place. It's certainly on Amazon and most of the major booksellers throughout the U.S. and Canada.
Okay, great. Let's go to Merritt in Idaho. Welcome to the show. Hi, Merritt.
Hi, George. Hi, John.
Hi.
Well, I have an interesting angel experience. I actually saw an angel. I was in college about 1984. And I was sleeping on the couch in my apartment, and I don't know what time it was, but it must have been, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock a.m. And I looked over and I saw an angel that was probably, I'm guessing, about 10 feet tall in my 8-foot tall apartment. And bent over, wearing white flowing robes. It was dark, but I could see it clearly. And when it stood up, when it was bent over, its wings were crossed. And when it stood up, I heard the sound of wind rushing through its wings. And it scared me because it was taller than the ceiling. And I don't remember the face, but I remember the white flowing robes, the large white wings, like the giant. And anyway, kind of scared me, startled me. And probably about 4 or 5 hours later, I get a call from my mother, who was 8 hours away. She was traveling to work about 5:30 in the morning, and she was involved. It was a dual mountain pass, and it was foggy, and she was involved in a 25-car pileup.
Oh, jeez.
And her car was completely demolished. It was completely flat. I mean, it was just unrecognizable. It caught on fire. And she said that somebody pulled her from the car, and she was unable to find out who it was, but pulled her from the car. And the only thing wrong with her was she had a sprained arm. She sent me a picture of her car happened to be in a newspaper, and it was just completely smashed. It was amazing she even lived. And so I always thought, you know, maybe that was kind of an angel coming to say that things would be okay. So I don't really know why I saw that angel.
Why do these things happen to all kinds of people, John? Andy in Seattle, welcome to the show.
Hi, George and John. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm a new listener as of 3 weeks ago.
Oh, great.
Caller. I was actually referred to, referred from a friend who listens to your show after my experience that happened to me. In late August, my father passed away, and it was, you know, it was pretty rough on all of us. I have, you know, two brothers. One of them's a twin brother, and I work as a truck driver. I drive at night. I'm currently doing that right now. I'm pulled over, of course, but
okay.
So one of the nights I was having a really, really bad night at all my stops, and I was driving back extra late, you know, 3-4 in the morning. And I started nodding off, you know, several times, you know, as I'm driving down I-5. And the final time that I actually dozed off and had my eyes shut for, you know, a few seconds at least, you know, I was jolted awake instantly right as I was getting ready to head towards, one of the barricades in the middle that separates the off ramp and, you know, the far lane of the freeway. And as that happened, I, you know, glanced over to my right, and I swear on everything that I saw my recently deceased father pulling his hand back away, you know, as he was basically reaching over with his left hand, you know, trying to guide my hand, you know, to steer back to the left before I hit this barrier. And the most mind-boggling thing to me is, you know, we didn't have a very good childhood growing up with our father. You know, he was, mentally and you know, physically abusive most of our childhood. And, you know, we were a religious family, you know, and he did suffer quite a bit before he passed away. But, you know, I believe, you know, now that, you know, that he, you know, perhaps was my angel that night. You know, he didn't look like anything amazing or anything like that. You know, he actually looked still sickly from the last time I saw him, before he passed away in the hospital bed that he was in. So
let's get your reaction, John. Can family members, deceased family members, be angels, or is it something else?
Well, I mean, you know, it's that's an amazing story, Andy, and an amazing experience. given the nature of your relationship with your father, as you describe it. But, you know, yes, I mean, the number of instances that, where people have come forward and said that they had a an experience, you know, that they were helped or in some respects, in some cases saved, as Andy was, by a family member, a deceased family member. It's a very common manifestation of this. And, you know, in the Third Man Fact, in my first book, I talk about Jerry Leninger, the great American astronaut who was on the Mir, the Russian Mir space station, for many months. And it was absolutely, you know, he was confronted with a series of near catastrophic incidents. There was a fire that burned out of control, and there were a whole host of episodes that could easily have ended his life on Mir. And he was under constant severe stress while he was on that space station, and he felt the presence of his father, his deceased father, a number of times. And his father came to him, and it wasn't as direct as Andy describes, you know, where there was actually an immediate intervention that made the difference between life and death. But in Jerry's case, it was a sense that you will get through this, you know, good for you. You know, you always wanted to, you know, to be an astronaut, and you achieved your dreams, and you're gonna overcome this hardship. You're gonna be fine. And just a sense of, and so at the point where he felt he was going to perhaps, you know, come apart at the seams mentally because of the stress he was confronting, he had this sense of comfort and strength, and it came from his father. And there are a number of examples like that where a parent or a deceased parent or grandparent or even a friend, and I talk about them in both of the books, you know, is the bearer of this strength that they receive. So Andy's case, although, you know, notable because of the immediacy of the intervention, you know, is similar to some of these other examples. So it isn't always an angel as we think of an angel. You know, these sense presence experiences can be angelic, you know, and especially for people who are of people of faith, that's how it's manifested. But in many other cases, it's not.
Can you train people to conjure up angels?
I think people can experience the presence. And I think that, you know, I've concluded after years of researching this phenomenon, which continues to fascinate me, and it will till my last day, I'm sure, just because of the power of it and because of the variety of it. But I am absolutely convinced that people can experience the presence, You know, whether it's an angel is something that, you know, each individual is going to have to, you know, decide for themselves. Sure. I'm convinced that we are not alone, and that this is a capacity that each of us has. You know, what the origin of that of the experience is another question, another debate.
Let's go to Sebring, Florida. Lillian's with us, first time caller. Hi, Lillian.
Hey there. You know, I'm 96 years old, George.
Are you really?
And I've been listening to your programs since 1980 when I was listening to the, what's his name? He was talking about vegetables. And
that was Art.
Basically, yeah, Art Bell. Well, anyway, I was in radio when I was 14 years old on WOR.
Oh,
when
yeah.
When they first started out in Woodside.
We're on that station now.
I used to sing on their on their radio program when they were in Woodside. And, you know, that's a long, long time ago.
Well, you know, right now, Lillian, you're on WOR, so people in New York are hearing you back on that station.
Well, you know, I tried to talk to the president of the company, but the secretary wouldn't let me talk to him. I wanted to find out something from them. Well, anyway, this is only one of my side experiences. I worked at the New York World's Fair in 1939 and 40, and when I got out, I was in television with all those guys when they first started out, with all the producers and directors and everything.
Everybody who became network superstars, I bet.
Well, you know, I can hardly hear you, so I'm going to get right to the point about the angels. Now, when I retired, I was Well, it was the 1980s. My two brothers and I, Danny and Ted, they were younger than I was the oldest. We retired to Sebring, and we used to be called the Three Musketeers because this was a small town at that time. There was only 60,000 population. But anyway, we were called the Three Musketeers. We were so close. We used to have lots of fun. We knew everybody in town. I was a real estate broker at the time. Well, you know, My one brother, Ted, got cancer in 2001. He died in 2003, and I took care of him while he was here at home with hospice. And after he passed away, my other brother, Danny, right away got cancer.
Ugh.
And when he came out of the hospital, he had Parkinson's. So that meant I had to take care of him for 5 years. So I took care of both of them until they passed away. And everybody came to the house. The hospice people used to call me an angel. And you know that during the last phase, when Danny was going after 5 years, I saw an angel come to the foot of his bed. But it was my brother, Ted. He came, and I knew it was him because he always wore a hat. And he's a tall guy. And so he came and he spoke to Danny, but I couldn't hear him talking. But when I woke up, I was laying on the couch next to the bed. And when I woke up and I saw this man there, I didn't know who it was. But then I saw the hat and I knew it was Ted. And Danny said to me, Ted came and he talked to me. And he said, I'm going to be going very soon, Bill. And I want to thank you for taking good care of us. He said, it's been such a pleasure to know you.
That is a great story. Who takes care of you, Lillian, or you take care of yourself?
The Lord helps me. I go to church every Sunday, and I can still drive my car. And I take care of a big house with 3 bedrooms and a pool. And I do everything by myself because I can't afford to take on any help. But the Lord is helping me, you see?
Good for you. And when are you 97? When's your birthday?
October.
Well, let's celebrate it. Make sure you call the program.
Well, I'll tell you something. I've been trying for 30-odd years to get into your program. And tonight I got in. And when I get out of my bed to get in a chair, I lost you. And so I tried and tried and tried, and I finally got in for the second time.
How about that? All right. Well, you go back and listen to the rest of the show, okay?
All right. Thank you for letting me talk
to you. Okay, Lillian. Thank you. 96 years old. See, that, wow. She's an angel all by herself, John.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just amazing. Spunky amazing. And everything else. You know, if I ever get that far, and I don't think I will, but gosh, I want to get there with the kind of energy she has.
Yeah, you have to admire that. It's incredible. And also to have been there for her brothers when they needed her like that.
Let's go to Boise, Idaho. Kevin's with us. Hey, Kev. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Hey, John. How's it going
good.
Out there?
Hey, I'm going to be good. Out there, by the way, in March. So make sure you check my calendar and come on out.
I already have tickets, George.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah. In fact, we're opening up a new donut shop here in town. So I want to say hi to all the Guru Donuts guys making donuts right now. We listen to you every single
Super.
Night.
You make sure you come up to me during that event, okay?
Well, what's your favorite donut?
My favorite donut, chocolate covered.
Chocolate covered. All right, we're going to do a George Norrie donut for the event, actually.
Okay, great.
Did you know that that theater's haunted?
I heard about that.
So I have access to it. We're gonna put a recorder in there and do and hopefully catch an EVP.
Ooh, that'd be cool. Okay.
Yeah. So one thing. I'm married to an angel actually.
I love that.
And I want to wish her a happy birthday today. Today's her birthday.
Great.
So my question to John is, you mentioned like Native Americans and Middle East, you know, the meditating and Christians, how much of this is simply intent?
That's a good question. Is it the intent or what is it, John? I think it could be a combination of both.
Well, I do think that there's, there's a, if you go looking for example, you go to a pilgrimage site, there's a sort of messianic context in which you enter, almost an ecology. And so if you encounter something in that context, or, you know, you may be predisposed towards this kind of experience. But, you know, anyway, I'm not sure if that answers the question.
John, take a moment, give out your website and how people can get a hold of you and look at all the other things you've done. Go ahead.
Okay, sure. So the website is thirdmanfactor.com or angel-effect.com. There's a forum on the site, so people can actually describe their own experiences, and many have, and it's been very active over the years, the site, the last few years, as people share these stories, because I think what's really important is that people come forward and do share these accounts. I'm very excited about the Angel Effect, because I think it takes the third man factor to another step, and that is that it shows that people, anybody can have this experience. You don't need to be seeking adventure in your life. You just are conducting your life, and you can have this sort of experience.
All right, John, you take care. Let's when I'm up in Toronto sometime this year, the date's not set yet. Definitely come by the Queen Elizabeth Theater, okay?
I will absolutely be there, George. I really look forward to that.
Maybe we might even get you as one of the three guests up there.
That'd be lovely.
All right, John. Thanks so much. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.